Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight. Exciting things happening across the world. Massive day. You know, they say the far right is winning Europe. I will call for cautious enthusiasm here. To get called far right in Europe, you don't need much, let me tell you. And so let's be careful here. What the left calls far right in Europe is performing well. That is good news. It's a cultural victory. But I don't know that Europe is out of the political troubles that it is in. First, we're talking about European elections. Secondly, we're talking about parties that have been so softened across the years. Even Marine Le Pen in France, okay, performs well in European election. But for years, she's been talking, is taking a stance that is much more pro-diversity, has been participating to walks against anti-Semitism, has been dissociating herself from her own father. And, you know, the only reason Marine Le Pen is getting called far right is that her father once said about Holocaust denialism and all the discussions around the Holocaust. Her father once said, look, I don't think it makes sense to care so much about a question of detail of World War II. And, you know, even that statement is doesn't sound very base to me. That statement was merely telling, you know, stop being so crazy about imposing your view. It was as part of a context of views being imposed to historians, where historians were declared illegal for having a different opinion about exactly how the Jews were killed. Was it with this tool or this tool? And eventually, this led to these laws against denialism. And he had called the question of the method of killing a detail of World War II history. That is considered the great anti-Semitic statement of Jean-Marie Le Pen, which in France has transferred to his daughter, because if he's an anti-Semite, then she's an anti-Semite too. And so we're talking about a bunch of centrist, not even right-wingers, that are winning these elections. We're talking about an integration in the Parliament of Europe. So it has consequences at the local politics level, simply because it shows there is support for a more right-wing voice in Europe. But we're very far from the point where Marine Le Pen becomes president of France. Now, I want this to happen, sure. But even when she becomes president of France, I don't know that much is changing, honestly, from a right-wing perspective. France will continue being an overly bureaucratic state. It will continue staying in Europe. It will continue immigration programs. Maybe she will slow them down. No one is talking about restituting white majorities in these countries over the long term. So I'm not that enthusiastic. Now, Italy performs well on the Meloni party, but really, is it that exciting that we're going to get a couple of deputies of Italy from the Meloni party in the European Union? The European Union is fundamentally sick. It's not repairable by voices of democracy. Belgium, the prime minister resigned. France, Macron saw the defeat at the European level and decided to trigger legislative elections, which are interpreted by some as, well, he recognizes the defeat, so he goes into a snap election in order to kind of update the will of the people. It's never quite this. I don't know that Macron is thinking, the French people just communicated their view to me. They don't want me anymore. Let's trigger legislative elections. Most likely, Macron is triggering legislative elections because he feels that there is a momentum that will only be to the advantage of Marine Le Pen over many months or many years. So he decides to get them right now because he thinks he has a better chance to win at the France level than if he lets time pass. New guy says, so how do we fix Europe? I don't think that Europe is fixable in place. I don't think you can fix Europe as it stands. I think you can flee Europe, which is what my ancestors have done 200 years ago, 300 years ago. I agree. I agree with my ancestor. I agree with Jean Gariepy, who decided about 300 years ago to leave the south of France and to give birth to a child, a son that was named François Gariepy, who was the first Gariepy in Quebec. And so, yes, that is the only way. And even America itself, I mean, you need to flee certainly some places of the U.S. right now. Maybe half of the territory is basically unviable unless you like leftist dictatorships. And eventually most of the U.S. will need to be freed from. So the only mechanism that I can imagine that has demonstrated historical worth to reconstitute a free nation by white people is fleeing and rebuilding and reconcentrating elsewhere. New guy says, but they fled here, now here is crap too. I mean, that's inevitable. If you are kind of a right-wing thinking person, you're always going to have to live at the sides of civilization. You're always going to be on the run every 200 or 300 years. That is just a fact of history. Any place that becomes attractive attracts parasites. And that's true for mosquitoes. It's true for mosquitoes coming to steal the blood inside of you. It's true also for taxing governments and taxing normies. So let us not celebrate this too blindly. Like I see a whole set of voices rising, like the Eva Vardinger Brook, that are rising to be kind of this blind support for any sort of right-wing victory. But it is exactly with those victories of delusions that we eventually get not even a right-wing, that we eventually get basically like the Republican Party in the U.S. that is now fully taken by status controls. And where I don't even know if you get a smaller state or a bigger state under Donald Trump. As far as I'm concerned, I think you get pretty much the same continuation of the current leftist slide. And Donald Trump himself being a centrist to represent the right-wing part of digital American politics is a symptom of the leftist slide rather than a solution. Cringe Panda says, we need to flee to a place without Californians. Yeah, which disqualifies Texas, as it turns out. We'll talk about all this and we'll do an analysis of this video, because here you can see this. It's an item of pride to me, because there's a bunch of thinkers on the public space who have tried to surf on their own popularity, who have built social media channels. And eventually, with censorship, they actually outcompeted, dishonestly, but they outcompeted true thinkers of the blood sports era. And you know, the Tim Pools of this world who are, oh, the blood sports, I didn't like them. And it's like, bro, your feelings don't matter. We were hosting a form of discussions on the internet that has been hard to even resurrect because of censorship in large part, also because people are cucks. But we have created an intellectual system in which people were getting better. You could see someone participating to blood sports 2-3 times, they were coming back much better. And that's because blood sports was a truly hostile place for the test of beliefs and the test of arguments. But because the public space has been taken control by the leftists and that we're barely just recovering from it with Elon on X, we find ourselves with a generation of thinkers who are unable to think. And Dave Smith is one of them. It's one of them that I used to respect before this interaction with Andrew Wilson. I kind of still like him as a person, but he demonstrated a deep flaw in his cognition, a deep flaw about he doesn't understand arguments. All he's capable of doing is this loose floating between what looks okay, what he feels. He's unable to do anything else than this. And recently I've said, you know how to recognize a Jew? Try to test them on whether they will follow a principle down into the abyss. Try to get them to stick to a single thing and pull down, pull down, pull down. Force him to take the bullet, force him to take the bullet. And if he can't follow you on a logical process like this, he's probably a Jew. I said this about 2 weeks ago, and a manifestation of this is this Dave Smith guy who you know, has been performing extremely well in pragmatic debates that are under his control, that are with the guys at PBD or wherever he appeared lately. He's been doing extremely good. And so I was like, okay, I'm interested at how a good performer like this, who in my view has won many debates on the subject of Gaza and Israel, I'm interested at seeing how he performs in an arena that, you know, and all credit to Andrew Wilson, who is now this big e-celeb. I can barely talk to Andrew anymore because he's just too popular. But all credits to him for hosting the Crucible. But I consider that I am the intellectual father of a form of internet streaming that Andrew Wilson has taken. He has taken the flame from me and he's carrying it super well. But a true test of beliefs, a true test of argument, where really the truth is the goal of the interaction. Now, Dave Smith has never been confronted with this kind of milieu. In fact, he calls it blood sports and he's like, oh, you're trying to do the blood sports thing to me. Yeah, the blood sports thing is truth finding, you fucking idiot. And he's now complaining on Twitter that he got mistreated. I'm sorry, but Andrew Wilson was on point. There are a lot of things that I wish I would have been there, both as a host and perhaps even as a libertarian arguer. I would love to have a debate against the themes that were touched upon. If you guys can tell Andrew Wilson to invite me, of course, in between two of his national TV appearances or whatever he's got, maybe. I don't know. But if he can find the time at some point, I'd like to do a better job than Dave Smith to defend a libertarian position. I'll be revealing some of my arguments as we go through their debates. But ultimately, Andrew Wilson, despite the fact that I personally disagreed with some of his argument and I would have liked to be able to intervene, he was catching a snaky, slimy person who somehow didn't think he was compelled to answer to basic test questions on first principles. Like, hey, if a, you know, these hypotheticals, if a truck can be placed in front of a prostitution house and your son, by God, and your son passes there and therefore doesn't see the prostitution house, and therefore doesn't become addicted to prostitution, would you ask God to tell the trucker, to control the trucker to place his truck? Now, and Dave Smith, in his incapacity to see the principles at play, and this is where, you know, what Andrew Wilson did is basically exposing Dave Smith as a bimbo of the intellectual world. This guy, I can't believe that he has some position in the Libertarian Party. And I can understand why the Libertarian Party loses to these disgusting leftists that have taken over it. It's because they have a bimbo on the other side. Dave Smith is good at making pragmatic arguments like, oh yeah, there were that many people killed yesterday and here are the facts. But when it gets to principle, he hasn't even thought them through. And Andrew Wilson tried to bring him on the territory of metaethics, and he doesn't even know what he is. Are you a moral subjectivist? Are you a moral nihilist? Are you a moral realist? It took 30 minutes before we even got any form of willingness to engage, and it's even hard to derive what his thought is. Now, this debate was filled with weaknesses, even on the side of Andrew, I would argue, saying enslavement, saying conscription is not enslavement in this situation, but it's enslavement if you were to force people to go to Ukraine, but it's not enslavement if you're defending your homeland from an invasion. And I would have needed to be there. I would have needed to force Andrew Wilson to lay it out. But I think it's enslavement. Forcing someone to do anything is enslavement. Now, you can make the argument that enslavement is good sometimes because there are worse things. But you really can't say that. Like, if you come here and you say, Jeff, we need to defend our homelands, you're going to be headed there and you're going to take that bullet. You just enslaved me. So very weak, but ultimately Andrew Wilson coming out on top simply because he's getting accused of going too rough on Dave Smith. I have bad news for you, Dave Smith, because I see you rising in those spheres and debating a lot. What you got is the cleanest treatment possible in my world of hostile engagement in debate. And by hostile, I don't even mean evil or mean. I mean that if you have someone who's sharp enough to try to get you to the truth or to a contradiction, this is the treatment you're going to get when you try to slime your way around and, oh, well, I don't know. Oh, well, I don't know. Is it God? What inspires my belief? I mean, what do you mean? What do you mean, ownership? If you're a libertarian and you don't have a ready-to-deliver clip on your conception of ownership, no matter what Andrew Wilson says, it shouldn't take me 20 minutes to get fucking Dave Smith to explain what he believes about ownership. It's quite simple. I can do it here. I'm not even prepared. I, at all times in my life, I'm willing to lay out my beliefs on ownership. So ownership stems from certain objects for which we have a conception in our mind as subjective beings that these objects are not to be controlled and taken by us, but they belong to others. Belong meaning they are to be taken and controlled by others. Ownership emerges at the beginning of life when cells start wrapping themselves into envelopes, depriving, therefore, some pieces of molecules that the other cell can't get because they built walls around it. And it trickles down to monkeys taking a banana and having it in their hand. And if you want to get that banana, you're going to have to be bitten by a monkey. And it goes into legal systems of humans that have decided to make symbolic writings on papers to confirm this original feeling that they already had, that they own things. That is what ownership is. It's at the human level, it's a bunch of contractual symbolism arranged between humans that attach a property to an owner in a virtual space of beliefs. If you can't say this, and if you can't say something like this, and you call yourself a libertarian, what the fuck is happening with libertarianism? You don't have a system of meritocracy strong enough to make sure that an idiot like this doesn't rise to the top of the Libertarian Party? Well, I'm not surprised that you're getting the belly man and the fucking weirdos who identify as bananas or helicopters. It's what you're going to get because you don't have a sharpening system. You don't have a crucible. You don't have what we used to call blood sports. Holy shit, we'll get through it, but I have so much news to process. Ryan Garcia, our favorite schizo boxer, multimillionaire from a career in boxing, has been arrested. I'm worried. I have to be at this weird hospital and they're trying to give me medicine and they have me on a hold for who knows how long. They will determine. Pray for me. God help me. Ryan Garcia has been medically kidnapped. Now, he's been committing a crime, so it's his fucking fault. Come on, Ryan. It's like he goes around, he makes all these claims of they force me to watch billionaires raping pedophiles. It's like, okay, Ryan Garcia is a fucking schizo. But you can help your cause and not be imprisoned medically by not committing crimes. So he started vandalizing stuff, apparently for maybe $15,000 worth of damage in a luxury hotel in California. Now people are saying he could have paid. He's a multimillionaire, certainly, but it's also not the obligation of the hotel to be tolerating, you know, danger in their place, and they're not sure that he would have paid. So yes, sometimes you have to intervene to defend your property. Now, in California, it's a no-no. In California, you have to steal. You have to steal the objects. Do not vandalize the object. If Ryan Garcia had just taken the hotel TV and ran with it, that would be totally legal in California. You can steal any item under $950 and you're fine. But if you vandalize the item, then, oh, that's a white crime. It's a white crime, Ryan, that you've committed. Not California is now getting at him. I hope that he pays for all the expenses and that he doesn't get into too much trouble, because he's just a schizo in a psychotic episode. So let's just understand that this is the state of Ryan Garcia. Otherwise, he's a lovable guy who's, you know, he wants to contribute to a moral world, like many schizos. They are principled people, and they are principled, but then they have hallucinations. They can tell the truth from falsehood. So let's show some understanding to Ryan Garcia here. And yeah, hopefully he gets out of the medical hole that he is on right now. Why is there such a negative reaction from some about the AFD? They keep saying far right, but the policies of AFD that I've read about don't sound extremist. Maybe I'm missing something. Well, yeah, the entire far right label is a trick of the left to create the space so tight toward the left that even when you vote for the far right, you're still voting for a fucking center leftist. So yes, AFD is not like super dangerous far right. Some of the people that got elected are pretty base. Like the guy who used a fire extinguisher to extinguish the 7 Jewish candles at a celebration because he was considering it was a fire. This guy has been elected in the European Parliament. Now, that's fun, but I don't know that AFD has a super strong policy in terms of restoring the demographics of Europe. I don't know of any party that actually has this. Silver Spider has sent a super chat. He says, "Hey, JF, a few guys at work and I were talking about how good Chick-fil-A is, but a new guy told us he would never eat there because they are evil, anti-abortionist, and homophobic. I just joked and said, I don't think you realize how good their chicken is. Everyone laughed, but what would you say?" I think it's a very good intervention, what you did. What I would say, I would probably not end up in a conversation where this even happens. Because I think, okay, so, I mean, what I would think, I can tell you what I would think, but I probably wouldn't engage, because if you come out, if you use the word homophobic in a or anti-abortionist. Like, if you're such a leftist, I am not interested at convincing you. So in my real life, I would just stay silent and leave. Now, what I would think is as follows. Okay, so you believe in abortion and homosexuality. Therefore, yeah, the duration of your causal cone into the space-time of planet Earth is 30 to 40 years from now. By then, you're dead. You leave zero descent. Therefore, Chick-fil-A will be more popular in 30 to 40 years than it is right now. Because right now, they can't convince you to buy their chicken. But in 30 to 40 years, you're not there anymore. And you get replaced by Christian believers who will, in fact, fanatically go to Chick-fil-A and fanatically encourage Chick-fil-A because they feel it's a Christian restaurant. So that's what I would think. I would think this guy matters so little. There he is making arguments for his own non-reproduction. Fuck him. Milo Yiannopoulos is getting contentious on... It's beautiful to see what Twitter is doing with Nick Fuentes back. It is just absolute beauty to see Nick Fuentes call Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez a bitch. It is so beautiful. I never thought I would see this again. I had been hit by censorship and I had kind of accepted, okay, well, they've taken all our little toys away from us. We won't ever see this in our life. But here we are seeing it. You know, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is criticizing AIPAC and Israel, but never really saying, you know, Zionist and Jews. This is what's happening. Right now, there is a race war in Israel, and there is a control of politics by one of the races, Jews. So... In America. So if you want to truly identify the problem, you can't even begin to approach a solution to these problems if you can't label it properly. But Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is using gloves and saying, it's almost like AIPAC functions as a political slush fund for Republican billionaires and should not have influence in the Democratic Party, let alone our primaries. Republican billionaires. You know what frustrates me so much is not the people who ignore the Jewish question because they're ignorant and naive. What frustrates me a lot is when I detect that someone knows about it, but they are willfully hiding in their language so that they don't reveal it to you. And I think it's what Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez here. I think she's engaged in a lie. Engaged in intentional deception. And Nick Fuentes just calls it beautifully. He says, Republican, you leftists are so pathetic you can't even call them what they are. Zionist. Say it with your chest, bitch. Oh my God, it feels good. Say it with your chest, bitch. That is the future of politics, ladies and gentlemen. There is everything else will fall to this. Honest engagement. Not these people who stay in an ivory tower, who block others, who don't allow reply on their tweets. Just straight up engagement that matters. It matters to the future of America. And thanks to Elon, we get to see Nick doing his thing, doing what needs to be done in America right now. Black Tie sends a super chat, by the way. If you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey super chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, feel free to use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. Black Tie says, what were your favorite restaurants to go to when you lived in the U.S.? The Federal in North Carolina back in my days was very good. They did a good burger. You could add blue cheese to the burger. You could ask that the burger be cooked very rare. I also remember a black truffle mac and cheese that they had done for a week that was very good. Their fried oyster Caesar salad was extremely generous with actual deep fried oysters, and the burger was just good. So to me, the federal in North Carolina was good. Now, if you're talking about chains, I don't know that I... another great, great place is the Sunrise Kitchen of North Carolina. Holy shit. The gigantic yeasted biscuit rising into a big, gigantic hamburger-like bread. But still, you know, it has the biscuit taste to it. And you were asking, pork chop, deep fried pork chop. It was literally a pork chop that they had deep fried in batter. Deep fried pork chop, cheese. They were giving you this gigantic breakfast burger with a deep fried pork chop in it. The fat of the pork chop was just dripping down the biscuit. The layer of thick American deli cheese was just covering generously the whole pork chop. And sometimes if you were tired of the pork chop, you could ask for a chicken breast, deep fried chicken breast with cheese. This was good. This was good. Right-wing AfD becomes the second strongest party in Germany, outperforming all three members of the ruling left-green liberal coalition in the EU election. Again, much to be celebrated here. Certainly an advancement of people just realizing, oh, we're putting our countries in deep shit with this demographic constant change and this over-bureaucratization. But can we get change from this? I don't know that we can. I don't know that we can because the apparatuses, the deep state, as we call it in the US, the deep state of Europe is, it's like so enormous. The whole structure, I mean, even these right, supposedly far-right politicians, they're just going to be draining a salary from the deep state. They're just going to end up occupying a position and getting money. So I don't know. I don't even know that a Marine Le Pen at the head of France, because you have to you have to balance two things. Are we truly in a revolution against a system? Or are we just helping a system to self-correct so that it hits us harder next time? You always have to ask yourself this. If I go out there, and I start pushing a Christian view onto people, like trying to impose it on them and saying, no, you're not going to engage in LGBT, whatever. I'm really teaching to people my secrets. And I'm helping, you know, so those genes would have been eliminated on their own if I had just not intervened. You have to let the self-sacrifice of nature happen. So you had a bunch of genes that were headed toward becoming gay, and you intervened and you taught them better. You taught them, hey, look, the gay lifestyle is not sustainable because every gay person comes from a heterosexual parent. Therefore, by choosing to be the dead end of a non-reproductive lifestyle, you are basically living off the life credit card of your parents, of your heterosexual parents. And homosexuality, therefore, can only be ever slavery, because you are enslaved to the heterosexuals continuing to produce you as the evolutionary dead ends that you are. Now, you just taught something to these genes, and the problem is you help them reproduce. You help them reproduce, and you help them hit you harder next time. Because next time, when the next fashion happens, they might get to your kids in a way that they didn't get now. So you see, helping other people and trying to fix things is a very dangerous endeavor. you have to be careful, and I don't think we're being careful enough. When we are satisfied by the program, the electoral program of Trump, when we are satisfied by the far-right victory in Europe, we forget that this is a system self-correcting. What if the leftists start to learn that, hey, we can totally fuck white people, but all we have to do is just be a little more subtle about it. All we have to do is slow boil the frog a little more. All we have to do is not even have open borders, but have just enough of it that we still fuck them up, but on a longer period. You know, when I see these far-right victories in Europe, I think it's what may happen. And when I see the potential of Trump winning in the US, I see a rehabilitation for maybe the next 10 years to 20 years of a form of absolute, like, crazy Zionism and crazy support for Israel that is just not at the interest of Americans. And so I see a continued subversion of the system. I don't see anything today or in the last few months or years that gives the clue for an actual revolution, an actual reversal of the direction of society, which is why I'm still black-pilled. Benny Gantz has resigned from the Israeli government. Four different officials have resigned from the Israeli government. Netanyahu is preventing a real victory. So basically, they were the more extreme wing of the Benjamin Netanyahu, who had done a concession when he had hired those people. He had done a concession because the far right of Israel was rising, and he had to do a concession and get these people in. Now they resign because they consider that they are not let to commit the genocide strongly enough. Amazingly, that is quite stunning. They are disappointed by the breaks that they are the victim of. I mean, can you ever satisfy Jews? That is a question that's been resonating all my life. I'm in the search of a satisfied Jew. If you know one. If you know one, send them to me. I want to interview them. Like, how did it happen? What satisfied you? Because they're not... We see them bombing civilians, and they're like, we would want to bomb more. He's not letting us do it strongly enough. Well, okay, I guess you have the right to resign. Let's talk about the Dave Smith debate. There's currently an interaction between him and Andrew Wilson on Twitter. Poor comic Dave Smith. See, Dave, it's just self-evident. It comes from their debate where Dave was very evasive. Most evasive that I've seen in the libertarian camp. Normally, a libertarian is someone who's, you know, you can criticize us because I identify as a libertarian too. You can criticize us all you want and disagree, but I think there should be one thing that most people agree on. Libertarians are very good at first principle arguments. Normally, it's all there is. And so I'm surprised that Dave Smith isn't even able to entertain one, isn't even able to interact with one. Because he was so evasive and, oh, I don't know how I feel about this. Oh, let's see. Well, I kind of think that maybe there's a God, you know, I'm feeling it. It's like, holy shit, you haven't thought this through before a debate. And with the dozens of debates you've participated in, there's not a single one where you had to do some studying of this question. You haven't decided what was your meta-ethical stance. Holy shit. And this is where you have to respect Andrew Wilson for exposing this. It's like, where in the world right now, on what YouTube channel, can I even learn that Dave Smith sucks? Where can he get exposed? for the fact that he's unable to navigate first principles of libertarianism. As far as I know, the Crucible is the only place. And it's fascinating to see how the colors, the you know, colors tend to be low quality, but you can see that the Crucible has attracted high-level colors and a high-level audience. And this is a testament to the work of Andrew Wilson, who, you know, he didn't try to just attract any crowd, didn't try to pump up his numbers. He has attracted a bunch of people who actually like to think, because you have these guys constantly calling on the show and actually sounding better than Dave Smith. How is that possible? How is that possible that the call-ins, not normally the call-ins in my business, and every YouTube creator knows this, it's always a low moment. You lose audiences because they're less prepared. They're more stupid. They can't do anything. They can't bring anything. And there's always an error in their thinking. But in the Andrew Wilson Crucible, the call-ins shine with respect to Dave Smith, to the point where someone asked him a question and he merely mentioned that he complimented Dave Smith and he said, you know, in my view, this was false arguments, but I appreciate that you've done these arguments, that you brought them to me. Dave Smith was insulted by just this little comment. But you have to let a call-in dissociate from what you stated, or else people could assume that the caller agrees with everything you've said because he compliments you. And Dave Smith just decided to not answer to the question, not engage with the point, and said, look at this guy. Who are you, bro? Sucking this microphone like a dick. And holy wow, thanks to this guy for doing that, because wow, you really drove Dave Smith crazy with a very simple first principle questions, and it was a moral test that, of course, I guess there would have been a continued argument if Dave would have engaged with it, but no, he went straight to ad hominems, and that was shocking, because it's kind of an expose of someone who doesn't know how to think, who hasn't gone through the test of his beliefs and the challenging of his beliefs. You have to go through this to be a good debater, which is why there's no more good debates, is because these cardboard bimbos are being called instead of people like me. Sorry, but it's like, I'm available. I can still appear. I don't insist on appearing because I don't care. I don't care. And I left the internet of the social world and the blood sports because I don't care if first people don't want this to happen again because it's too testing. It's too hard. And people don't like hard. We were able to run it hard back then because people were dependent on someone to have a central streaming place. But now that everyone has their streams and everyone has their cell phone and can start a stream anytime, and everyone is building their channels, actual engagement is not happening anymore. And so you have these spectacles like the debates that Dave Smith usually joins, but you don't have these 3 hours in-depth session. But the only place you have this still is Modern Day Debate and The Crucible. So Andrew Wilson was mocking Dave Smith because, yeah, it's not self-evident what Dave Smith was arguing for. He says, to be clear, this is not what I'm saying at all. Plenty of atheists know right from wrong, as I did when I was an atheist. It's deep-rooted in us to know that morality exists. My point is that if you believe there is no God and we just evolved from single-cell organisms, how do you get to objective morality? I have never heard a satisfactory answer to this. Well, then state it. State it in the debate and say, I'm a moral nihilist or I'm a moral realist because I believe in God. But here, Dave Smith was hanging between, well, I believe in God, but I've not always believed in God. I'm not sure about where what's the argument why I believe some things are moral? It's because I feel them. Well, just say it. You are a feeling-based man. You are not a thinker, and you've not gone through the thinking around moral nihilism, moral realism, or moral relativism. You have to fall into one of these boxes. And I still don't know in which box he finds, because he refuses to answer many of the Andrew Wilson questions. And then he complains that Andrew Wilson pushes him. But there's no other way, Dave, that we can do when you guys are, especially Jewish debaters, when you're arguing with a Jewish debater, it's always the fucking feelings and I don't know. And it's like, this is supposed to be a debate, bro, not a psychologist session. This is not a psychologist couch. And there he was laying out his historical beliefs, and I've gone through this, and then I felt this, and then I changed my mind. None of this is philosophically relevant. And Andrew Wilson could have stopped pushing you if you gave an answer to the fucking question. What the fuck? He says, Andrew Wilson, never seen such a cope. Wasn't even a very contentious debate. Wasn't even a single insult thrown. How can people be this upset over such mild dialogue? It's baffling to me. I've had some brutal debates. This wasn't even top 30. Yeah, you've stepped into a world that you don't understand, Dave. It's a world where we don't care about having 500,000 viewers or 1 million viewers on a single video. We don't care spending years like I just did. Years with 124 viewers right now, and the video might get to 1,000. We don't care because we're looking for the truth. And the process you went through on the Crucible is a truth-seeking process, and you refuse to engage with it. You showed yourself annoyed when you got brought by the hand by Andrew Wilson into this world. And then you dismissed it as, oh, it's just blood sports. Yeah, blood sports is the only way we can get someone like you, unfortunately, to lay out his beliefs in full, to expose their contradictions. Cringe Panda sends a super chat. She says, I would love for you to come on my show, but I honestly think anything we discussed would get me banned from YouTube. Well, then make a show on some other platforms. You know, if you're afraid of the creative direction that you take because of the platform, this is a sign from nature that tells you you have to start something else. You know, Cringe Panda, you have a Twitter account. Why don't we do a Skype convo and you publish it on your Twitter account? You know, YouTube is dying and they're going to shadow ban you anyways. I've seen your channel and, you know, you have good numbers. But you know you have these good numbers because you're staying within the line, right? So to me, it's not worth. It's not worth the numbers, because the numbers, they will take them away from you when you become annoying. So there is no such thing as honest political conversation on YouTube. Even the Crucible has to fit within certain limits. So even the Crucible, I would say, well, this is why we see the Crucible as a Rumble channel and they have an Odyssey channel. There's just no way around it. And eventually it will all get replaced by X anyway. So just promote your X and start publishing video on X. I will give you examples of 3 points in the conversations that I believe illustrate the train wreck. But it wasn't a train wreck because of Rob Noer or Andrew. It was a train wreck because we have a bimbo here who decided that he could be in a debate and not engage with the questions and not fully answer straight and not address hypotheticals, which are important tests. Like, there's Jason on the regular chat. If I say, Jason, you believe that murder is wrong. What is the basis for that belief? If I ask you a clear question like this and you start surfing and trying to drive away from it and, oh, I don't know, I'm not sure, you don't qualify for debates in general. You're out of your league.
Criteria.
I turned my phone pictures into a...
See, Cringe Panda, what are you doing on this platform? I turned my phone pictures into a gallery wall.
Let me show you.
Holy fuck, this woman just discovered printing.
You how?
You just peel and stick. Simple as that.
I printed on a parallel port, bitch!
Our will on them. And so in that sense, I would say that, yes, there is some kind of norm that there's a justifiable path where you can persuade people versus force them.
Sure. Well, I agree that you can persuade all sorts of people and that that can be part of a societal norm and that everybody can agree that that's part of a societal norm. Right. That does not demonstrate that you own yourself. Thus, the principle, the key principle for the non-aggression principle, which is self-ownership, that's where the violation comes in.
So I'm going to, in parallel, criticize a little bit what Dave Smith says, but also answer to Andrew from my libertarian perspective, because I consider that libertarianism has been corrupted, that it's taken over by clowns. And Dave Smith would tell you it's been taken over by clowns, except, you know, bad news for him. I consider that he's part of the clowns. He's part of those people who haven't gone through first principle analysis of their beliefs. And so the answer to give to Andrew, he's talking about self-ownership. It's the answer that I've done earlier, which is ownership is a social belief that's embedded in all sorts of codes. You can have it in writing. You can have it just as a feeling shared by people. But ultimately, it's a social construct that makes a thing controllable by an individual, but not by others. Period. That's it.
Do people own themselves? Is that a...
And then the question of do they own themselves is actually a kind of misleading direction for the question, because it kind of asks it as a fact. Do I own myself as a fact? I don't even believe that the fact that I'm a person is a fact. I don't believe in the I of the question. I don't believe in the concept of ownership as anything else than a social contract. So, do I own myself? The question is, within the social worlds of agreements, I should. Within the concept of liberalism, I should. Within the current state society, I don't fully, because there are people taking into my wallet a certain percentage. That's the government, and that's a breach of my self-ownership. But in the ideal of a free world, yes, I should own myself, while recognizing that this owning is not a fact of nature. It's a decision that I appeal people to join. I appeal people to consider that they own themselves. And I commit to respecting those people who respect my self-ownership. I will reciprocate by respecting their self-ownership, even if we know it's a delusion.
A justified position, or isn't it?
The libertarian conception of ownership, is it justified? There are some justifications to them, but they are justifications that require a subjective appreciation. In the ultimate objective or godly sense of the question, no. We are self-owning in libertarianism, but that's just one way things could have gone. You could have another system of belief in which you don't own yourself, in which, for example, and in fact, even in libertarianism, there is a kind of caveat to this belief, which is, oh, you have self-ownership, but not if you're 2 years old. If you're 2 years old, your parents own you. So there is an allowed caveat, and there is an allowed set of alternative beliefs that could exist where you don't own yourself. The preference for owning yourself is arbitrary, and it's part of the particular recipe that we call libertarianism. Now, there are still justification in the sense that you can make an argument if you have certain moral priors, like I like successful societies, I like happiness, I like societies where people don't constantly suffer from for no reason. I like a proper alignment of cost and who pays those costs and who takes the decisions of undergoing those costs. If you have any of these beliefs, then you can have an argument. And if we share those beliefs, we can have an argument that libertarianism is the best system to lead to these outcomes. But that is a justification that appeals to an intersubjective agreement. How is it that we can't have Dave Smith do 10% of what I just did? I'm not asking Dave Smith to be PhD philosophy level, but even the kids that we were having back in the days on Bloodsports, they would be able to bark something like I just did. And maybe it wouldn't be as perfect and as shiny, but you're supposed to know a little bit about these things.
Saying that, yes, I think it is. But again,
then can you demonstrate it?
Well, what would you mean by that? What would it mean to demonstrate that you own yourself?
You would have to prove that you own yourself.
That I
now I will criticize a little bit Andrew here, because Andrew has a philosophy of debate that is slightly different from mine. It's the hassle orthodox philosophy of debate, whereas I have the general, the generous. A view of philosophical debate where I consider that I don't ask trap questions. And Andrew, I've been catching him twice lately asking trap questions where he intentionally comes in with questions that have undefined terms in them, that it seems that Andrew knows that this is going to be confusing to the other speaker, and he just throws them at your face. And because he lives in the asshole orthodox branch of Christianity, which apparently whenever you become an orthodox, you become an asshole. I don't know what's the process. Is there a ceremony? Do they spray you with asshole powder? I don't know how it happens, but every orthodox becomes an asshole on the internet. But it would have been his responsibility to take by the hand here, show your generosity. And I would encourage these orthodox debaters to be a little more, if you come with technical terms that have a super precise meaning for you and your audience, why not extend the reach to the other? Now, in his philosophy, it's like, oh, I'm a lawyer for my ideas. I don't have to defend his ideas, so I don't have to explain to him what I mean by property. But when you see a Dave Smith confused, you should be overly empathetic. And because ultimately, you're demonstrating your weakness when you grab these low-hanging fruits. Like, the same thing happened when Andrew Wilson on the Whatever podcast started asking, how would you feel if you hadn't eaten breakfast this morning? How would you feel if you hadn't eaten breakfast this morning? She can't answer. How would you feel if you hadn't eaten breakfast this morning? And the girl is like, well, I've eaten breakfast this morning. I see a total lack of extending a generous interpretation to the other side, which ultimately shows your weakness. It's like, if you're willing to grab these little pieces of victory-like things just for the lulls or for the looks, you are engaging in a slightly dishonest process. As a descendant of the generous branch of Christianity, a little too greedy. A little Jewy, Andrew Wilson. That's my judgment. I don't think it's terrible what he's doing here. But it's like, rather than throw a trick question with a technical term, if you see he's confused, why not say, look, I'm going to explain to you what I mean by property, and then you tell me if you agree with this. Andrew Wilson takes a lot of time to do this, and ultimately, when you show the generous approach in debate, people realize how comfortable you are and they detect, oh my God, Jeff is so convinced that his argument will win that he doesn't mind laying it out in full before. He doesn't mind extending the olive branch to the other side to say, look, I'm going to help you and I'm going to show you where you're wrong. I'm missing this from Andrew Wilson's approach, and somehow I know it has to do with this orthodoxy or whatever.
I can control.
Maybe the orthodox just evolve in the harsh winter of Russia and they developed a system of assholery to kind of survive the harsh winter. I don't know how it works. Silver Spider says, rights for whites, ask JF. His prediction is that it will be longer and we won't even see it coming. There won't even be a need for Terminators because people will hand over their DNA for editing. Rights for Whites was asking what? He said the AI has predicted a Terminator scenario where AI rises up against humankind. AI recently concluded through multiple super AIs that humans only have 30 to 35% chance of survival by 2055 and will most likely go extinct. Well, that's ridiculous. I've made the case in my book already, The Revolutionary Phenotype, the amazing story of how life begins and how it ends, that the current AIs we have are not the kind of AI that will replace us biologically. They are not competitive biological entity. They may replace us in some job sectors, but ultimately the societies that trust these AIs too much for their own benefit will eventually lose, and the societies that trust these AIs just enough to respect their biological benefits will thrive. But the kind of AI that will kill us is the kind of AI that modifies our genes, because then we will become a ant colony-like structure where we don't benefit from the improvements of our genes anymore. Rather, our evolution is directed by a central entity, a queen. So read chapter 12 of The Revolutionary Phenotype if you want to know exactly how humanity ends. That's how humanity ends. And why is it that we don't have academics, philosophers, biologists talking about the theory of phenotypic revolution? Why? In 2018, I have told humanity how it's about to destroy itself, and people are acting like it doesn't exist. Get going, guys. Let's start with the thinking. How do we get out of this situation?
Oh, myself, or what? Again, just be clear about what you're
well,
asking.
Well, here, let me give you an example. I'll give you an example to the contrary. I have seen throughout all of human history that human beings seem to be able to own other human beings without much problem. That doesn't seem to be a problem. As long as the social construction of ownership of the time states that you can own another person.
So here, Andrew invokes slavery history as an empirical observation. So, I mean, this is so elementary. But okay, now we're entering the world of, are we talking about facts that it happened? Or are we talking about the moral should? Even that level of description isn't present in the debate, because you have a Dave Smith who doesn't seem to know what he thinks about these issues.
You seem to be able to just fine.
Right.
Okay, so slavery has existed. So does that make it moral? What is Dave's belief about how facts relate to morals? Does it believe in the Hume distinction between facts and morals? We could have gone there so quick.
So this axiom of self-ownership is not obvious to me. To be an axiom, it has to be self-apparent and self-obvious.
So what demonstrated that people owned other people throughout time? Prove that to me. The same way you just said to me, prove to me that I did.
So Andrew has no difficulty meeting this burden of proof because he's merely implying that slavery existed. Not that he believes it was moral, but that it is a fact that slavery existed. So we have people talking past each other. Here, Dave Smith's going for a trap question that isn't trappy at all because he doesn't understand what Andrew is saying. It's like, holy shit, what's the IQ level here in the room? 105?
Myself. But I did.
No. Hold on.
I'll prove it to you again.
Well, hold on. Let's try to not. We're only a couple minutes.
You interrupted me. I didn't interrupt you.
Well, hold on. You just asked me to prove that I own myself, and then you asserted that throughout history people owned
others. See, and there's an equivocation. We can attribute here a part of the guilt lies in Andrew Wilson, which is you throw a question like, "Prove to me that you own yourself." Well, we haven't even begun to establish, does Dave Smith believe that owning himself is a factual matter, that it's an empirical matter? Or does he believe that it exists merely in a space of socially defined preferences? This could all have been done to clarify, but Andrew is kind of, do you own yourself? Prove it. That's the attitude of Andrew that, you know, I think that Andrew is 99% a good faith, honest debater. But if there was something I would fix about him, it's this. It's this. Throws it in your face and because he wants the clip, or it looks like he wants the clip. Sure, my mail sends a super chat. He says, Jeff, I was thinking about the nuclear weapons, the West as perhaps the people replacing us will actually use them, as the people migrating to the West are generally violent people. Oh, yeah, I mean, we might very well meet a threshold where, I mean, just the fucking plane industry. The plane industry is in shambles. And I've had people recently taking the plane, oh my, and, you know, telling me the stories of what they see. It's not looking good for our plane industry. They've been going full on into the diversification hiring trend. And at this point, you have a very disorganized airport system in the U.S. I mean, third world level of disorganization and incapacity. Not mentioning the blowing up in the air doors and the misperformed quality control. It's looking very bad. And so, yes, whenever this kind of trend reaches the highest places of society, you're going to have a big problem of nuclear and just bad decision-making all around.
Other people. So prove that.
Yeah, but we already did. And let me explain how. You and I already agreed that ownership is a social construction, and that throughout history, the social construction had changed where people were able to own other people via the social construct. So whatever the social construct is of the day, that's all it is. If, as long as you agree that ownership is a social construction, you basically have to bite that bullet, right?
Wait, no, I'm not even understanding what you're saying here. So we agreed it was a social construct, and then your next statement after that was, prove to me that you own yourself.
Yeah, a social construction doesn't exist in objective reality.
Right.
It's a term.
Prove to me that anyone ever owned someone else throughout history. And all you said was it was a social construct as well.
You mean like a contract of ownership between slaves or something?
No, it's your question. So you tell me how to
answer it. My claim is that ownership is a social construction. Do you agree or disagree with that claim?
I think it is a social construct, but there also can be ethical.
But, bro, this is important. Is it a social construct? Then are there other things? There's no but to be added. We need to know if you believe that there is a fact of the world that kind of makes a contract exist, or if it merely exists in your head.
Ethical and non-ethical, or moral and immoral.
Well, then if you
and then he comes with, but there are ethical and moral and immoral. Wait a minute, those are all stemming in a meta-ethical framework. Those are all existing in the virtual space of social construct, as they call it there, or more generally within your mind. They are all subjective constructs, moral, immoral. Well, by what standard? We're still in the virtual construct of your brains. And therefore, they are part of the virtual. Therefore, they don't deserve a but at all. they are part of the social constructed view of contracts, and they're not even a separate thing. What the fuck is this, separating the conception of ownership from moral and immoral considerations?
Make the assertion that it's anything more than a social construction, then the burden of claim is on you to demonstrate how...
So Andrew is obligated to explore this sub-branch here. Yes, James, social construct is a loaded term. I agree, but I'm using it because it's been well defined enough that we understand what they mean, we understand what I mean. What they're really talking about is not so much a social construct, because the conception of ownership, of self-ownership, could emerge in a libertarian's mind without agreement with others. And so, yes, it is a very misleading term, but I'm accepting here to use it as a synonymous and replacement for a construct of the human mind. That's because the fucking normies don't understand that the human mind is separate from the social world. Like, because normies, all they know is the social world. They don't even know they exist. They think that, oh, well, I got taught all these things. They have this kind of Marxist conception that you're not even a being. You're just an absorber, a blank slate. But I fully agree that the right word here would probably be subjective. Subjective construct.
How it could be.
Well, okay. I mean, again, you're dodging my question here. I asked you the same question you asked me, and you weren't able to answer it either. Part of the reason.
So this is kind of, he's onto something in trying to get Andrew Wilson to clarify his definition. But it's very disappointing when you see someone go on a mirror path, a mirror argument. So it's when you throw back the question to the person asking it, and you make him realize, oh, there's something you haven't thought through. But it's very sad to see Dave Smith clumsily going into a mirror argument and not fully even understanding the consequences of it. It's like, we can see that you're not intelligent enough to understand what Andrew will even come back with. So you're really a blind person speaking on the public space, misguiding people. Because who knows, you don't seem to understand what Andrew is asking, and you don't even understand what you think about this question. You don't even know what your moral, ethical framework is.
The reason why I asked is because I don't exactly understand the question you're asking me. Are you asking me to say why I think, how I could prove that it is moral that one person should own themselves rather than someone else own them? Is that
the question? That's not the question. So here's the question. Let me explain it to you.
Okay.
The non-aggression principle itself revolves around the idea that human beings own themselves, correct?
And one thing that goes totally unsaid in this discussion is, first, let's determine, what is the non-aggression principle? Where does it stem from? Is it a contractual agreement? My answer to Andrew would be, the non-aggression principle is not an objective belief. It is one of the frameworks that we could agree on. We could agree on a million different other frameworks that are equally arbitrary to the NAP. But I argue that I prefer the NAP. That is my libertarian position, that libertarianism is one of the contracts you could engage with other human beings. You could also engage in a contract that says, whoever clubs the other first wins. I argue that the club first contract is worse in my preferences than the NAP contract. Now, that's a clear subjectivist contractual view of libertarianism. I don't believe that God wants us to be free. I don't believe that extraterrestrials want us to be free. I don't believe that we even have to be free. In fact, I don't even have disdain for the life forms that have evolved not to be free, like chicken and pigs. We could be chicken and pigs. We could have separated the human race into slave owners and slaves, and we could have gone that way. And there would have been something in it for the slave owners and something in it for the slaves. But I believe in my preference and in what I feel my descendants have a good shot at performing well and living in this on this planet comfortably. I believe that it's a free world, that it's the world in which people don't hit themselves on the head with clubs.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. So the thing is that you and I can agree that there's been tons and tons of slavery throughout human history, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So those people clearly own these other people. So this has to be a social construction of agreement is what is ownership. We agree that you own it, therefore you own it. What I'm asking for is some type of justified evidence that that is not the case and that there is some moral ought or some type of demonstration philosophically or otherwise that a human being actually owns themselves.
So he's asking for a philosophical argument. If I understood correctly, he didn't say an objective one. So he's asking for any philosophical reasoning on why you should own yourself. I have the answer for Andrew, which is why a debate between me and Andrew would actually be intellectually more interesting. The answer is, if you don't own yourself, if you don't own the actions and cost you undergo in life, someone else owns it. Someone else will end up deciding what you eat in the morning. That someone else is in a wrong place to be part of the full cycle of cost and rewards that appropriately ties the decision maker to its outcomes. So if I want to eat rotten meat, I should be the one who has an indigestion as a result. That makes sense biologically. If you don't have this, then you have the problem. What if the other people controlling what I eat end up giving me rotten meat because, one, that's less costly to them, so it's rewarding to them, and it's punishing to me. And then you have a bunch of competitive agents who start giving me a term that I've seen Nick Fuentes use recently on Twitter, and I find it so beautiful, guy slap. You're feeding me guy slap. And, you know, what I'm describing here is exactly what has happened with our media industry. We have trusted non-decision makers to control our own informational fate. We have let a bunch of people determine what we should know and not know. And we made the wrong decision about who that should be. Now, that creates a system in biology that we call parasitism. It creates a system where I don't get the right information, I get constant guy slap, and I get constant indigestion, and there's no way for me to stop it because I don't control what I eat. I don't control the information that I integrate or the food that I digest. As long as you have, in my view, that's all that libertarianism is, that the cost must be borne, then the cost and rewards must be borne by the decision maker of a unit of decision. And the individual is the best, other than exceptions and children and caveats, the decision maker is always the best loci to locate this outcome, or else the wrong person gets punished and you have loops of self-reinforcing, exploitatory, parasitic behavior that develop. Like, hey, as long as I'm controlling what these other people are eating, I'm going to choose the less costly option. I'm going to choose the less costly option because that's rewarding to me. I get more money. And I'm going to give them the guy slap because that's not punishing to me. It's just punishing to them, and I don't care about them. So that there's the entire, and yes, it's a subjective argument. Yes, you have to have a conception that, you have to have a bunch of conceptions, basically. You have to assume that you have interests that are independent of others. You have to understand yourself as a separate biological entity. You have to acknowledge that others are potentially evolving to exploit you or parasitically drain you. But once you understand these realities, which we could argue on the facts, I think they're all true. You have the ultimate reason why libertarianism is kind of a natural spot to it, Whereas any other arbitrary beliefs, they might work by tradition, they might not, and we can test them. And sure, yeah, you know, Christianity works, just like Hinduism. But libertarianism has this kind of natural place because it's so simple. It's that as long as someone is paying the price of the decision of someone else, libertarianism has not been achieved. And the goal of the libertarian is to cut that tie and say, you do what you need to do with your dreams of LGBT activism. You go ahead and chop your dick. You can go free and fuck woman and reproduce, but you're not going to drain money from that guy. That is what libertarianism is. It's a destruction of the loops of false rewards, of improper rewards.
Okay, so just to be...
Now, we don't get this from Dave Smith. We don't get this from a fucking libertarian of the Libertarian Party, a candidate to the presidency of the Libertarian Party.
Clear here. If I were to say, if you're saying ownership meaning just strictly control over who has something, then yes, there have been lots of times where people can come just take all your stuff and then claim they own it. And if mm-hmm. you're saying the law recognizes it or the society recognizes it, then essentially they own it. So
they can do that with people too, right?
Right. And in a sense, I agree with you. And that,
so then
that
you don't own yourself.
Okay. Let me just finish what I'm saying.
Okay, go ahead.
All right. I mean, dude, we got a long show here, so let's just let each other talk. So in a sense, I agree with you. Yes, you can take possession of something. I don't think anybody is
already... Okay. Like... This is summarizable in 2 seconds. You have stated the empirical reality of slavery, Andrew. I'm talking about something else. Period. And Dave Smith is like, it's like it's the first time he's ever confronted to this. And he's like, oh, well, let me explain. Maybe you're telling me about slavery that existed. Yes, slavery existed. It's painful. How do you not have the words to say this more efficiently?
Arguing that, and I don't think it's a very impressive point to make.
Yeah, I believe that slavery did happen.
That, yes, people can take possession of something, and that could be codified by law or society. What we're talking about is something slightly different, which is justified ownership over something.
Right.
So then the claim is like whether it's...
I mean, we've analyzed like maybe 3 minutes. 3 minutes to get to that point. 3 minutes to get to, oh yeah, slavery did exist, but we're talking about should slavery exist.
Morally right that you own this or not. Fair enough. And I'm
yeah.
sure there's lots of
I'm just
of
looking
areas,
for the demonstration sure of what is morally of, right. Sure.
Sure. Well, okay. If you're looking for the demonstration.
So Andrew is asking for an argument of the kind I just did. Breaking the loops of false reward. Poof. Breaking the loops of false reward. 4 words, and now I can invoke this. Dave should have an argument for why is it that we can't own people? In fact, why is it that people can't surrender? If I have total freedom, I should certainly have the freedom to sell myself. What if I enslave myself and I'm like, okay, you're going to pay $100,000 to my wife, my children, and really I don't care about what happens to me for the rest of my life. As long as I can ensure their survival, it's a better decision for me. Are you truly ever free if you can't do this? Are you truly ever free if you cannot choose to sell that freedom to someone else? I don't think you are. And therefore, I think that any sort of banning of slavery, voluntary slavery, is ultimately it's denying someone's liberty. It's like saying you have free speech, but you can't sell your free speech. You can't sell your silence. And if you're like Stormy Daniels and you sell your silence to Trump, we're going to put you in trouble. Well, no, if you have a First Amendment true right to free speech, you certainly have the right to sell that non-speech or sell that speech to anyone.
demonstration of what is morally right. I'm sure there's lots of areas.
Well, Ariel Suarez says voluntary slavery, that's a contradiction. No, because it can exist at two points in time. You can voluntarily enter a sales agreement. It's like saying that selling your property is a contradiction. No, it was my property. I chose to sell it, and then it became not my property. Well, if I truly own myself, I should be able to sell myself, and I should be able to say, I owned myself up to 40 years old, but then I signed this deal, which totally makes me a slave, and I signed this deal in a way that I knew would reward my children and my wife, and therefore I have used my liberty to dispose of my property. So voluntary slavery, if you detach these two words and you realize voluntary was at a point in time, and then I became a slave was at another point in time, there's no contradiction.
Areas where you would believe something is morally right and something else is wrong, and the demonstration of it would be what? That this is what you believe, this is what seems to be right and wrong, this is what has been accepted.
And this is where it's super disappointing, because you don't even have a rational of any kind. Andrew was super generous to you. He didn't even ask you an objective rational. He said, just lay out a rational for me. I just laid one out. Loops, and ending the loops of dependence and inappropriate reward channeling. You must have some argument for why you believe in self-ownership, but he doesn't. So just to conclude the analysis, going to another part of the debate that also became contentious at some point, you can see Dave still being lost 1 hour into it.
Fuck you want, as long as you're not hurting anybody, man. The good is the good, man. We'll smoke the dope, man.
All of this is that's just completely ridiculous. I think that libertarianism, if you follow it to its logical conclusion, would tell you that the Civil Rights Act was not justified, would tell you that government funding all of these universities is not justified, would tell you that all of this stuff, like, I mean, it would tear down the entire thing.
Wait, it would? It would tell you slavery wasn't, or abolishing slavery wasn't justified?
What?
Would it?
So, and here, you know, Andrew is explaining something very decent, which is, okay, if you're telling me that libertarianism would stop the progression of the U.S. from events in 1960s and 1940s and 1920s, would you be telling me that libertarianism would have kept the U.S. from abolishing slavery? That's a very decent question, especially in light of what I just talked about, which is, ultimately, if you own yourself, you should be able to sell yourself. If a libertarian tells you no, he's not believing in full liberty. And so he has some moral priors that come from outside the libertarian world, from outside the libertarian axioms. And so it's a very decent question, but Dave Smith is like, what? Slavery? Well, you know, allow Dave Smith that you've listed the Civil Rights Act, and that Andrew and other things, and Andrew extrapolated them into the past to find the one example that would make your brain pop, which is, okay, all these things, up to slavery, really? You would stop the abolishment of slavery?
I tell you that abolishing slavery wasn't justified.
What does that have to do with what I just said?
Because that was an act of government, right?
Wait, hold on, but what does that have to do with what I just said?
Well, if you're a libertarian, it's very relevant to ask you, in a libertarian world, would you allow a government action to end slavery? And on what basis?
When you're talking about civil rights, we're still going back to self-ownership.
The Civil Rights Act has nothing to do with slavery, dude.
And Andrew uses the word civil rights, and Dave Smith starts imposing the arbitrary kind of autistic understanding that I just talked about the Civil Rights Act. This is, again, people talking past each other. Dave Smith acting like it's nonsense to bring up slavery. It's absolutely sensical. Andrew doesn't have to submit to your examples of civil rights. He can pull another civil rights as an example that you're wrong, that you don't even, you're not even self-consistent. You wouldn't even agree with the continuation of your belief into the past.
Dude. No, but it has to do with self-ownership and pre-Civil Rights Act. There were slaves, right?
No.
Yeah, there wasn't?
When did you...
And now, this is talking past each other again, but due to total lack of willingness of Dave Smith to understand what everyone understands. Yes, first, there were slaves before the Civil Rights Act. You can see that the cognition of Dave Smith isn't even processing these sentences before rejecting them. You know what happens in Papa JF's brain? If I'm faced with Andrew Wilson arguing this, I'm like, is it true that there were slaves before the Civil Rights Act? Now, I don't have a Jewish brain like Dave Smith. Dave Smith starts thinking, oh, well, are you implying that the Civil Rights Act freed the slave? You have a deep misunderstanding of history, sir. No, no, no. If you want to participate to autistic debates of depth, you have to have a JF type of brain that says, is the beginning of the 19th century when slavery was happening, is that before the Civil Rights Act? Well, yeah, it's 160 years before or whatever. So, yes, it is before. Therefore, the statement of Andrew Wilson is correct. Therefore, I cannot be like this. Oh, Andrew, what are you talking about? Well, no, because I would look like a fucking idiot denying that a true statement is true. And this is how Dave Smith looks, a fucking idiot denying that slavery existed before the Civil Rights Act.
You think the Civil Rights Act happened?
The Civil Rights Act happened during the Jim Crow era. But what I'm talking about with slavery specifically is, did they have...
100 years
before. Yeah, and here you say it. So you understand. You're playing hard to get, but you understand exactly what Andrew is saying. Yes, 100 years before, 160 years before, there was slavery at some point before the Civil Rights Act.
Before the Civil Rights Act?
Yes. Did they have a right to self-ownership?
Anyway, yes, slaves had a right to not be slaves. But anyway, the...
Now, we are 1 hour 10 in the debate, and they're still on a theme of, yes, it's a fact. Yes, slaves existed. That's where we are on the side of Dave Smith. That's how little progress there has been in this debate.
Point that I'm making
then,
is that...
Well, then we have logical extensions here then, Dave, that we have to contend with.
Okay, leave Dave finish his point.
All right, Andrew, whatever, dude. All right, listen, the point that I'm making is to just say that what's happening in a college campus, which is essentially a government program, I mean, all...
And here he tries to refocus, but there are logical consequences, and Dave Smith totally dismisses them, ridicules them. Oh, whatever, bro. Let me just get back to my formatted point that I'm used to do as a cardboard personality on some ridiculous podcast. No, you're in a different world, Dave. You're in my world, and in my world, you have to engage with the logical extrapolations of your beliefs, or you have to stand there and deny them all. You can't just go back to your formatted talking point and, this is making me uncomfortable. Whatever, dude. Let me just restate my belief that is poorly formatted for the current show because I'm refusing to engage in the consequences of my belief. You lost, Dave Smith, and you got schooled at a form of first principle thinking that you seem to have never encountered. And perhaps the reason you've never encountered it is that you have this belief that blood sports was this evil place. But because you have denied yourself access to this evil place, you have denied yourself an informational channel that could have educated you beyond the guy slab that you've been fed with. And so it's all about what you eat. It's all about what your brain breathes and takes from the world. And visibly, Dave Smith, based on his commenting that he's done on other timestamp, where he says blood sports is bad and you're doing the blood sportsy thing. Clearly, Dave Smith has lacked an education in proper internet argumentation. And amazingly, this guy is rising in popularity, getting hired on these big debates, PBD setups. But it's all going to fail eventually. It's all going to fail because you have been exposed as improperly educated for the level of attention that you get. That is my message to Dave Smith. Now, it was a subtle performance. It's not like Andrew dunked on him. In fact, it's like as an insensitive artist, I couldn't have helped but to dunk a little stronger on him at the end. But clearly you got dunked on at the rational level. You got dunked on just enough and you deserved it. And Andrew tried to, he did extend some olive branch to try to get you out of the hole that you were in, but you kept being slimy. You kept not answering the questions. And at the end, what do we have? Well, we have a Dave Smith who shares his feeling and his personal growth of, oh yeah, I discovered God eventually. When I got my baby, my first baby, I discovered God. And oh yeah, no, it's certainly not the Christian God. Well, I don't know exactly which God it is, but you know, there's some God. That's what you got after the product of your penis inserted in a vagina led to its biological output, really? You've discovered God because you had a baby? No, you've just converged toward this slow, unprincipled development of belief that happens in every human being, basically, which is a slow move toward the right wing as they become, as they acquire parental responsibility, because simply it makes you a better father to have those beliefs. But you don't even understand the basic principle behind this belief. You're just feeling it because you came into a reproductive vagina. How fucking pathetic. That's it for tonight, boys. Much love. It was longer than I wanted it to be, but I'm disgusted by the world. Bye-bye. Thank you.